But as we do, I'm just kind of curious, before we go to any of that, how many of you here are mountains people? Like, you really love the mountains. I'm not saying you're mountains over beach or anything like that. You're just a mountains person. You love the mountains. How many are here? Yeah, quite a few of us. Yeah, I love the mountains. Maybe not over the beach. I love the beach. But there's just something about being inside the mountains. Now, how many of you have ever been to what I would call a really large mountain range? Like, we have the Appalachians, but I'm talking Rocky Mountains, the Sierra Nevadas, or you've been to Alaska or the Alps or something like that. Really large mountain range. Yeah. Yeah, it's just different, isn't it? You get up into some of those high peaks, and it's pretty incredible. On a couple occasions in my life, I've had the privilege of being able to go to Colorado. And this is from one of my trips to Colorado where I went to Winter Park. And if you've never been in the wintertime, there's just something captivating. Like, you're looking at this right now going, that's just beautiful. Let me tell you, taking this picture, being surrounded by this, it's just absolutely gorgeous. Something majestic about the mountains, right? And so while I was there, I was skiing, and I went to the very top of the Winter Park ski resort, and I wanted to take a picture from there. And so at the very top of this peak, this is the bowl that's down below, you're at about 12,080 feet at this point. And this was absolutely dumbfounding for me. I mean, I had to higher up than I've ever been. Can't say higher than I've ever been. Like, higher up than I have ever been. And the cool thing is when you're up here, you're kind of looking out and around. You can see the other side. You're right close, when you're in Winter Park, close to what they call the Continental Divide. That's right there. But when I turn around, the view of this is there are peaks even higher and taller. And they just keep coming up and up and up. And there is something majestic. You know, Scripture talks about how the earth can reflect God's glory when you're up. But when I'm in a place like this, there's a particular verse that comes to mind. And when I read the verse, this is kind of what I think about when I do. And the verse simply says this: how beautiful on the mountains are the feet of him. So we're talking about mountains, right? How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who publishes peace, who brings good news of happiness, who publishes salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns. How beautiful on the mountains. And the reality is, the mountains, as gorgeous as they are, as beautiful as those mountains are, and they can declare the glory of God, and when I'm in the mountains, I do feel that I am close to God. You know what they can't do? They can't bring the good news. They can't. As much as those mountains shout about the greatness of God, they cannot bring the message of Jesus. They can't bring good news. They can't talk about the one who came to save us. That's a privilege that is reserved for you and for me. We have the privilege of doing what even those amazing pictures and majestic mountaintops, what they can't do. We get the honor of bringing the good news, the greatest news in the world, that there is hope. That you may be hopeless, but there is hope because God Himself came. And the moment that you put your trust in Him, He will not only save you, but He will come and take up residence and live in you and through you. He can turn hopelessness into hope. We have the opportunity to do that. I love the language that Isaiah uses here. And I love this particular translation of the Hebrew. He says, you bring good news, publishes peace. What is publish? Publish means simply that. Someone else wrote it. You're just the one who gets to put it out there. We don't bring peace. We don't bring happiness. We don't bring salvation. God has done this through Jesus. We just get to put it out there. And when we put it out there, we become even more majestic than the mountains that we just saw, because we get to point people to hope in a dark place. In a world that is full of hopelessness, we get to deliver hope. And so as we begin to talk, and I'm going to have Mike Pern come, we're going to interview him. Here's something that I want to say about this whole idea of bringing good news, publishing peace, publishing salvation. When we give away hope, we stay in hope. When we give away hope, we stay in hope. And what I mean by that is that in the process of encountering hopeless people, in the process of encountering people and going about what you go about, when you give away hope, when you publish peace, when you present peace, when you present happiness, when you present salvation, it does something for you. It reminds you, something comes up inside of you, and you stay in hope. And I think for some of us, when we get kind of blue and we're getting down and we're wondering what's going to happen next, the fastest way for us to regain our hope and for us to live in our hope is to begin to give away hope. Because you can't give away from something that you don't have. God will then place hope in you so that you can then turn and you can give it away. So when we give away hope, we stay in hope. And I want to bring Mike Pern out. He's going to come and he's going to talk to us about what he has been doing for quite some time now in bringing hope to the hopeless. I don't know where Mike is at. So if Mike will come out. Yeah, you can welcome Mike. That'll help him. And so there's a lot of things in Mike's story. I'm going to change the screen on that. That I want to talk about. But just to begin, there's a very specific ministry we're going to talk about today. I know you do a lot of things. I know you love to serve. We're going to talk about that. But let's talk a little bit about what Mike does. Is he serves inside of a prison ministry. So what kind of drew you to that whole thing? Servant, tell us a little bit about it and what it is, and then we'll talk what got you into it. So tell us what you do when you go, what all that is about.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Y'all hear me? Here at Next Level, we used to do a home repair ministry, and that kind of fell by the wayside. We weren't able to continue to fund it, so I was kind of at a loss. I didn't know what to do. With my time, I was like, you know, God, I feel like I'm just spinning my wheels. I didn't have an outlet, so to speak. So I just asked him, you know, I was like, God, find a place for me, put me somewhere, use me. And then Clay had a good friend of mine up here on stage who'd been doing prison ministry for quite a while. And that day he came to me and said, hey, I would like you to come and join this ministry. And what I need is a bass player to play in the band that does the prison ministry. And I thought, well, that sounds pretty easy. I mean, I don't have to interact with prisoners or anything. I can actually just get up there and play the bass. Well, God had different plans for me. And he put me right in the thick of it.
Yeah. So you show up at this prison ministry. Tell us about what your first time in. What was that like, first time you walked into?
Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've spent most of my life trying not to go to jail. And when you first walk in, even though you're with a crowd of people and you hear those doors clang shut behind you, it's a crazy thing. But you also know that God has put you here. He's with you. He's got your back. And I mean, that's a very comforting thing, that knowing that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, what God has planned for you, is wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, as I heard you talking about the mountains. That's exactly that feeling.
Yeah. So what, for those of us that have not been to prison. What's the mood inside? What is kind of the atmosphere?
Oh, it's dark. Yeah, the mood is dark. I mean, literally, the first day of the ministry, the guys are sitting there like this, and they've got this real scowl on their face. I mean, these are some bad dudes. These guys have done some bad stuff. And when they walk in, you know, they're completely shut off.
Yeah.
No hope. You know, they are and they're just worldly. You know, all they can think about is getting back out on the street so they can continue to do the things that they got them in there, basically.
Mm-hmm. So, where do they place their hope? You've been doing it. How long have you been doing this? Let's give everybody an idea.
4 or 5 years now.
Okay. So over 4 or 5 years, you've had a good experience to be able to at least get to know several of these guys.
Yeah.
And not only ones that are coming to your prison ministry, but even the ones that are kind of not involved in it.
Right.
So what are they placing their hope in? What does hope look like inside of a prison?
Well, most of their hope is usually in the idea of getting some kind of appeal or you know, that's their goal in life. That's the height of it. Maintaining their status in a gang, you know, trying not to, you know, make somebody else mad, you know, and get shanked in prison, that kind of thing. But you know, they're like I say, it's a worldly idea of what they put their hope in. You know, is my lawyer going to be able to get me some sort of reprieve or something so I can get out early? Or, I mean, it's really, there's not much hope in there.
So hope very, very little, as I could have,
very
I
little,
would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that creates the darkness, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of fear.
A lot of fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you come in to the prison ministry and you show up to play bass.
Yeah.
Right? But that evolved. So tell them a little bit about what you began doing, like, you know, the table discussions and
yeah, that's how it's set up. I mean, the ministry itself is based around forgiveness. And the forgiveness hopefully leads towards hope of forgiveness. So that's where we kind of hang our hat there by saying, you know, guys, you can be forgiven. You know, God will forgive you for everything that you've done. I've heard people on the outside, you know, say, oh, God could never forgive me. I've done such terrible things. Like, you got nothing. You got no excuse for not turning to God and asking him for forgiveness, because these guys that are in prison have literally done the worst.
And so, most of them don't believe they can be forgiven.
No, not at all. I mean, there's no, that's not even a thing in their mind. They're not even thinking about that. And the ministry is built around a lot of videos of Billy Graham, things like that. We do a lot of testimonials. We have quite a few women who come in and give testimonials about the things that have happened to them in their life. And you start to see this shell that they've put up starts to break down when they see a woman standing up there talking about forgiving a man who has done something terrible to her. And then, and I've actually heard this at my table before. I did that to somebody, you know, and it just sends chills. And to see these guys, just it really just breaks them down. They start to cry. They realize what they've done, and because they see somebody that has experienced it from the other side,
right?
And the forgiveness that they, and then they'll go and ask that person for forgiveness, even though that wasn't their victim. You know, and the hugs and the tears and everything that follow. So the forgiveness is where we offer the hope.
Yeah. So getting into some more of the story here, you went from playing in the band to handing out cookies? Like what?
Oh,
what?
Yeah. So Kairos Ministry is an international ministry, and that's where I started. It's a very structured, it's a great organization, but when they show up for a weekend, they bring thousands and thousands of cookies, literally giant carts full of little packs of Oreos or Nutter Butters or something like that, and you go out throughout the whole prison and everybody including all the administration, the staff, the guards. Everybody gets a pack of cookies, and it gives us the opportunity to go back in. Now, I was terrified of this because all I really wanted to do was go and play the bass. And they're talking about not just hanging out in the gymnasium where we normally hold our weekends, but actually going back into the prison and meeting these guys in their pods. And the pod is surrounded by about 20 cells, so that's that many guys in a pod. And going and actually starting a conversation with these guys and using a pack of cookies to do it. Hopefully, you know, to be able to maybe start a prayer or something like that. I mean, you never know what you're going to get when you meet these guys. And it's the strangest thing. I didn't want to do it. I put it off all weekend. They kept asking me, you want to go do a cookie run? I'm like, no. And I did not sit at a table that weekend. I was just a helper. I served food that was coming from the kitchen. I kind of helped out, and I kind of sat back quite a bit and tried to, I was taking it all in, and it was really amazing. But at the same time, I was still, I was worried. I was like, I'm not good enough. I don't know enough to help these guys with their problem. And I met this woman who's a volunteer chaplain, and she grabbed me one time, and I was like, no, I got to play. She's like, don't worry about it. You're not playing. You're coming with me. And so this little lady, she's like 72 years old, bright red hair. She's about 4 feet tall. I go back into the bowels of this prison and start handing out cookies to these guys that so the prison that I go to is a young men's prison. So it's 18 to 25. And these guys were more like guys my age. They're from all over North Carolina. They go to this prison to go through this program to try to get some of their privileges back. Their privileges have been taken away for various and assorted reasons, but they don't get letters, phone calls, visits. So some of these guys haven't seen somebody from the outside in a long time. And I'm back there, and I'm, you know, everybody's got a spiel of some sort. You know, you got to kind of strike up this conversation. You're like, hey, how you doing, man? Cookies from Kairos. Just want to tell you God loves you. And most of the time, you get a blank stare, and they, like, drop them on the floor. Or, I mean, literally, they don't care that you're even standing there. And I had one guy. I'm looking at this dude, and he's huge. This guy's gigantic. I mean, he's broad-shouldered. I mean, shaped like a V. Mean, scary-looking dude. Looking in his own mirror, and I'm giving him my spiel, and I'm standing there looking at him. He turns and looks at me with this killer look, like he's like, he'd just rather punch me in the face. And I was glad there was a door between us. And I said it again because I thought, well, maybe he didn't hear me. And he put his fist against the glass. And it kind of everybody knows. I mean, somebody puts their fist out, you give them a fist bump. So I put my fist up against the glass, and he got this big grin on his face. And he's like, man, I just messed with you. You know, I just wanted to, you know, he said, God bless you. Thank you so much. You know, and, you know, he's like, he just gave me a hard time. And right then I knew, I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Right.
I was like, this is it. This is in that particular ministry with Chaplain Lynn. It was not Kairos. It was a very small ministry based specifically in that prison. And I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit. There was someone that you built a relationship, much as you can build a relationship with someone in prison.
Yeah.
And you did some checking up on him because you knew he was getting out, and you found out he was already released.
Yes.
This was in January, right?
He got out in January.
Right? He got out in January.
Yeah.
And so you said, hey, I want to meet you for coffee somewhere just to talk to him. Walk us through that whole experience, like who he used to be, like his whole life before coming to Jesus through you guys' ministry, and tell us about the interaction that you had. I think this is,
okay.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah, this is what makes it all worth it when you get to experience something like this. So this guy is sitting at my table. He's another one of these really big, really scary looking guys. He's missing a tooth, very angry, very, he just sat back in his chair the whole time. And I noticed as, you know, we would talk to the guys around the table, and you ask somebody a question, a lot of times they will look to a gang leader as to whether or not they should answer that question or how to answer that question. So I noticed that they kept looking to him during the weekend. So Saturday came around, and the weekend started on a Thursday. So, you know, as the weekend progresses, it gets a little heavier and a little more theological, and we start trying to bring the guys into prayer circles and things. He came to me on Saturday morning, and he was really excited, almost giddy, if you can imagine this big gang member. This guy was mean. This guy, his testimony starts, "I'd rather punch you in the face than shake your hand." He was just that guy, gang leader, off the streets, raised in a household with no God, lots of anger, lots of separation and stuff where he comes from. And he was so excited. He said, "Dude," he said, "I laid down my colors this morning." Sorry. I was floored, but at the same time, I was scared for him. And he kind of blew me off. He was like, "No, it'll be all right. It's no problem." I actually went to the head chaplain and talked to him about it, and he said, "Yeah." He said, "Who are you talking about?" I was like, "Well," and I pointed him out. I said, "I'm talking about Jamin there at my table." He said, "Yeah, he'll be fine." He said, "He's a gang leader, not just some guy. He's not a peon." He said, they're going to have to find a guy to replace him, basically. And later on that day, I was up playing some music and came back, and he wasn't in the room. I didn't see him. He had been off in the corner with his prayer partner. When he came to sit down, he was bawling. He was inconsolable. Put my arm around him, like, "Jamin, what's wrong, man?" And I thought something had happened to him. I thought he had gotten news from the outside because I didn't see him. I thought maybe they'd pulled him. I thought maybe his mom had died, something like that. And, I mean, literally for 5 minutes, I couldn't get this guy to talk at all. And he had accepted Christ. And it changed his life. Changed who he was. Changed his posture. Changed his smile. I mean, this guy, he's missing a tooth, like I said, and he is, man, he smiles, and it lights up the room. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So I've known him for 2 years. So through that ministry, that particular ministry, I met him again three months later in a sister ministry where he actually became a leader. So the first time we do it is Forgiven and Free, where we go in and we teach these guys, and there's three or four of us with three or four of them at every table. 3 months later or so, those guys decided they wanted to reach out to general population, and they put on the same ministry with just one of us at a table, letting them do what we did. Mm-hmm. And he had put together a rap group with some of the other guys, and they did a bunch of raps, and that was some of the most beautiful stuff. I'm not a big rap guy, but just hearing these guys, these brand new Christians, put their faith and their feelings into words the way that they did, it was amazing, incredible.
So he gets released. You knew he was released, and you find out.
I knew he was getting out, but I thought it was going to be in April.
Okay.
And he... I called the chaplain, you know, to say, "Hey, where's he going to be? You know, I want to meet up with him." And she said, "Well, he got out in January." So I don't know why he got out early, but thank goodness he did, or he'd have been in lockdown.
Yeah.
So he had gotten out, and actually by the time I got to contact him, he had already graduated from the halfway house, had a job, is working towards buying a car. And so I called him up and I said, "Hey, man," I said, let's go have coffee." And so we did. We're out in Monroe at a little coffee shop. And while we're sitting outside having our coffee, and he had, you know, once again, this the change in this guy was incredible. You know, I felt like a baby Christian sitting next to him. You know, it was everything about him is God. You know, he's sold out completely. His every thought is he prays constantly. It's just awesome. So we're right in the middle of all these race riots, all the stuff that's going on out in the world, and I see a police officer pull up. He's going to come and get coffee. So I'm wondering, how's this going to go? You know, is this going to be weird? I don't know. The radar goes up. You know, you just automatically think that might be something wrong. And Jamin, as soon as the guy gets out of his car, starts walking towards us, starts a conversation. Very spirited, jovial, you know, talking to this cop. And the cop was on edge at first, wondering, you know, is he just funning me or something? And I think he saw me, you know, another white guy sitting there, and he was like, well, maybe this is going to be okay. The guy comes out of the shop, and Jamin calls him over again and starts having this conversation with him, wants to pray with him, you know, and is talking to him and you know, and wishing him good luck out on the street, and, you know, and it was just beautiful. I was like, man, this is the coolest thing. And I know that cop walked away with a little extra hope in his heart that day, because this guy had reached out to him.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what his affiliation with or anything, but just to say, you know, God bless you, man. Thank you for doing what you do.
That's incredible. So all this because you have chose to serve, really, and to bring hope into a very hopeless place. So as we're kind of...
I get to experience it. I get to, just like you experienced the mountains, I get that opportunity to be a conduit. God said, this is where I need you to be, to tell these guys that I love them.
Yeah, just as our verse said, you didn't author the hope, you just publish it.
Right.
You just put it out there. So what would you say to some guys who are sitting here? I mean, it's not all of us are built for prison ministry, but it's serving, it's bringing hope. What would you say to someone who is not serving? What would you encourage them around serving?
Just do it. Pray to God. Find something. God will put you where he needs you. You know, prison ministry isn't for everybody. And it's not to say that somebody is squeamish and would be afraid, but it's that there's so many people out there that need somebody to tell them, you know, that they're loved. And it doesn't always have to be somebody that's in prison or somebody who's homeless. Although those people need a little extra loving. They need a little lift, you know, a little hand up sometimes. But, man, I'd just say, you know, find something to do. You know, pray to God and say, God, where do you need me? What do I need to do? Where should I be? Whether it be just serving here at the church, opening doors for people, or serving with children, find a soup kitchen. It's easy. And it's amazing to... I mean, these people are so open and so they want to talk to you. They want to tell you their story. They want what you have. They want that peace. They're looking for it. They just don't know how to receive it.
Yeah, so what I would tell you guys if you're here, I've said this for 6 years being here at Next Level, every single one of us has a personal ministry.
Absolutely.
A place to serve that's not just a church thing. It's a you and a somebody thing. And if you are needing some hope, I can tell you it'll begin with you serving. It will begin with you finding where you serve. Let me pray for us and pray for the prison ministry and all that is there. But just, you know, thanks for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome.
So, God, right now, I pray for all of us that are in this space. And hearing Mike's story about being scared and afraid but going to go do it anyway. God, I pray that would inspire many of us for that thing that you have been burning in our hearts for maybe a long time, to to just step out and do it. That God, I pray and ask that as we move out into our neighborhoods, into our workplaces, into our friends and relational circles, and we just begin to serve people, that we will be those feet on the mountains. That God, we'll just publish. We're just publishing your good news. God, thank you for the opportunity to do that. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, hey friends, thanks for joining us today. Before you head out to whatever you have planned for this weekend, let me talk to you about something again that is really, really important. If you would like to help keep your church strong, you can do so by heading over to our website at nextlevelchurch.org/give and choosing one of those options that's there. Every dollar that you give makes sure that your church stays strong as we go through this crisis and as we head through 2021, and that we are prepared more than ever to continue on our mission to raise the reputation of Jesus where we live, work, and play. Well, by way of benediction, I want to read to you the verse that I was sharing earlier from Isaiah chapter 52, verse 7, where the prophet says this: "How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, who say to everyone, our God reigns." Right? So may you this week live in the love of God. May you proclaim peace and hope to everyone that's around you. And may you know that despite all that is wrong with the world, our God reigns. Right? Well, Happy New Year, friends. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. And as a reminder, we'll be back next week for our in-person services at 9:30 a.m. Got something for everyone in the family. Or we'll see you right back here online at 11. Have a blessed week. We'll see you on Facebook, Instagram, all of our social channels all this week. I just want you to know, as always, I love you and we're praying for you.